Continuing in Jesus' words to the crowds from the later part of the Sermon on the Mount, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
It's so hard to know what to say today. Last night, a number of people bidding me farewell just said, there aren't words. And I agree that there aren't words. And Helen Hutchison had on a little white card. People were reading their white card Karenisms last night. And Helen had something that I'd said in a sermon one time where in deciding what to say, what you ask yourself is it true, is it kind, and is it necessary, and does it improve on silence? So we could just be here in silence for a while. It would probably be the best thing. But in thinking about Scripture, the best improvement on silence that I know in the Scriptures is Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, these three chapters in Matthew that contain the very essence of what Jesus came to teach us. Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the peacemakers, and love your enemies, and do not return anyone evil for evil. An eye for an eye is no longer the measure that we have of justice anymore, but instead compassion and reconciliation. And then these words about don't lay up treasures on earth, but store up the treasures in heaven, store up the things that have real meaning. So the two passages that Mark and Chandler read this morning, one about blessings and one about treasures, are the things I want to reflect on this morning with you. To think a little bit, talk a little bit about the blessings that I have received from you and the treasures that I see at the heart of this congregation that you take with you into your future together as a church and as a family. The blessings in the Beatitudes, those first verses of the Sermon on the Mount, are blessings that sometimes don't seem like blessings, poverty of spirit and grief and hunger. And so some of the blessings that I received here, I don't want this to sound like a negative thing, but some of them didn't seem like blessings at the time. And have turned out to be great gifts that I've learned from this church. And the one that came to mind, first of all, as I was thinking about this, was that you have taught me how to take criticism. And how not to take criticism, how it should be taken and how it should not be taken. And that has become for me a process of real spiritual discernment in my time here. When I would receive input from people, whether it was a white card or a comment face-to-face or something that came out in email or different ways, that I could say, you know, what is it that God is saying to me in this? And what is it that God is not saying to me in this? Here's something for you to learn about yourself in what you're hearing from people. And also, what is God saying to me about the person who is sharing the criticism? What are the wounds in them? What are the hurts in them? What are the issues that I need to be sensitive to as I respond to what they have to say? How can we together move toward healing and the kind of health that God desires for us? And those were not easy lessons for me to learn, and I do appreciate your patience with me as I learned those lessons, that lesson over and over again. And related to that, I really appreciate the opportunity that I had here to study nonviolent communication in some depth and to bring what I learned into our shared life together as we sought to learn as a congregation how to treat each other with kindness and gentleness. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? And one of the great blessings that I've had here at this time has been the opportunity and the encouragement for me to grow as a preacher and to find my voice in the pulpit. And that really happened here. There were many years of experimentation on other congregations. Both of us, long-suffering, patient people. But being able to be here and have this wonderful privilege of standing up here every week and reflecting on that particular moment in the ongoing life of a congregation, that's a wonderful thing to get to do, to spend the week before listening and talking and reading and thinking, in hearing what I would hear in meetings or in casual conversations or people dropping by my office just to chat or to touch base, that there was this sense of this flowing stream of the life of this community, this constant flow of human life that I would get to dip into and then articulate that flow where we were in the moment as a congregation, to reflect, to put words to our shared experience in a particular way, and especially to reflect on where God is in all of that human life and interaction that makes up the life of a congregation, especially a congregation that is so engaged with the world. And I'm not saying it well enough, what I want to say to you. There is no way to say what it has meant to me to be able to be the preacher in this congregation for 12 years. It has been an incredible honor and privilege to get to do that. And again, I thank you for your patience and for your encouragement. And there have been so many other blessings in being the pastor of this church, the babies and adults that I have gotten to baptize, and the people whom I have gotten to bless on their deathbeds, and the celebration of marriages here in this sanctuary and in people's backyards and parks and city hall, all the different places where those unions have been celebrated. And things like the drawings from kids that I would get in the offering plate on a Sunday. I've got a whole huge envelope full of those that I'm taking with me to Michigan. Lots and lots of pictures of border collies. Which are wonderful to have. Some are fairly benign-looking border collies, and some are kind of ferocious-looking border collies. Some with little yellow ducks next to them, and some with other dogs next to them. But to have something like that, and you know, in my mailbox this week, another packet of crayon drawings with letters that I could finally read that said, you know, "I love you, Karen," kinds of things. And those are just such a moment of grace in my life, and I'm so thankful for that. And all of the notes and the letters over the years that I've received from people, just out of the blue, acknowledging some gift that I have brought into someone else's life, or acknowledging the role that I play in this congregation and the challenges of that role sometimes. Those were wonderful to receive, and I've got a big packet of those that I'm taking along too. And particularly over these last 2 months since I've announced my departure, the emails and the letters that I've been getting that are thanking me to some degree, but mostly are reflections on what this church means to you. And to hear that, and to hear how sophisticated that understanding of the life of the church is, and how subtle and nuanced people's understanding of their relationship with the church and their role in the church, and their role in the future of the church. It's been heartening and exciting to read those and think what a sophisticated isn't exactly the word I want, but a profound congregation this is, a deep understanding of community and what it is to be a community of faith. And I could go on and on about the blessings I've received here. But I also want to talk about the treasures that you have here that you continue to hold in these months and years to come. And the first one is the depth of leadership in this congregation, on the session, on the various committees, the volunteers who give of themselves and their skills and their energy and their insight and their wisdom and their humor and their patience in leading the life of this church before I came here, during the time that I was here, and beyond. And that leadership will be very important in these next couple of years. And I encourage you to trust the leaders of this congregation. They are wise and loving, and that will carry things forward in a powerful way. They have a deep commitment to good communication and transparency through this transitional time, so pay attention to that. Listen to the various ways that they will be communicating with you, and trust that they have the big picture in their heads and the good of this church in their hearts. There is great health, amazing health in this congregation. And that's been fun to be part of that growing in health during these years. We have developed a broad emotional range in this church. We've learned over the years that intellect and emotion are not mutually exclusive, that they inform each other, that they balance each other, that they are both essential in a well-balanced human being and a well-balanced congregation. When emotion is subservient to intellect, when emotion is suspect, it gets sublimated, as any of you therapists out there know. And when, you know, authentic emotion is shoved down, it comes out as anger or depression in an individual. But in an organization, it tends to come out as anger. And so if a congregation's emotional range is limited to responding to negative stimulus with anger, it's not good for a church. It's hard on a church and the people within the church. There's that saying that if your only tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So getting to where emotional complexity is appreciated and acknowledged and explored and developed and encouraged in an individual human life and in communal life, then you have lots of tools to deal with as you face emotional challenges as a congregation. And there will be anxious times to come. It's just a given. In a time of change, the anxiety level goes up. Different faces, different voices will be here in this church over the next months. And so as that emotional soup gets a little more complicated, it's important to notice what the feelings are. I feel sad, I feel anxious, I feel uncertain, I feel frustrated, I feel excited, I feel a sense of hope. All of those things are just fine. There are no emotions that are not allowed. It's in the whole nonviolent communication system. The emotions point at the valid needs that are underneath. So to notice the emotions and to look within them and beneath them for what the need is, I need more communication, I need comfort, I need encouragement, and then develop healthy strategies for getting those needs met, and you're golden. So keep talking to each other, keep listening to each other, and never hit send after midnight. There's a wonderful story from the early days of the Christian church in Rome. It's a third century story where the Roman Emperor Valerian was persecuting the Christian church. And the Pope of Rome, or the Bishop of Rome at the time, Sixtus, wanted to appease the emperor. So he gathered all the treasures, the gold and jewels of the church, and gave it to Lawrence, who was the librarian of the Vatican, and said, you know, give these to Valerian and see if he will leave us alone. And so the word got to the emperor that here were the treasures of the church available to him. So he sent an envoy to communicate with Lawrence saying, you know, 3 days from now, we're going to expect you to hand those over. So Lawrence spent the next 3 days selling it all off and giving the money to the poor and the sick and the homeless and the hungry. And when Valerian's prefect came to talk to him and said, okay, where are the treasures of the church? He opened the window and pointed to the people on the street and said, those are the treasures of the church. And he suffered dearly for that. Emperors don't like those kind of lessons. But the thing is that the people are the treasures of the church. The people are the gifts that God gives to each other in order to have this community be that treasure in an earthen vessel. That every church is temporal and flawed, but there is this essential treasure at the heart of it, which is the devotion, the hearts and minds and souls of all these people who are together. And there is that spiritual truth in this congregation. There is that sense of great spiritual range as well as the emotional range of this church. We've moved a long way in 12 years together. I remember Carl Shadley, who was the interim pastor, and I was meeting with him to talk about serving communion on my candidating Sunday here back in 1998. And I said, well, what's the communion liturgy here? And he said, well, there isn't really one. And I remember when I was writing my first one here, I found myself trying to come up with an alternative term for Jesus. And we don't have to do that anymore. We can celebrate the divine. We can celebrate the holy in this place. And don't have to try to figure out the mystery. Don't have to try to solve the mystery of God as though God is some sort of an Agatha Christie novel where you get this relief when you finally have all the answers and have it nailed down. Instead, we're at the point in the life of this church where we enjoy the challenge and the meaning of exploring the many dimensions and manifestations of God. From the most intimate stirrings in each of our hearts, that still small voice inside each one of us, to the most magnificent expression of God's transcendence in nature, in music and art, and in the workings of the universe. So I thank you for giving me these years to grow with you, to watch the children grow up, to work with this great staff, that I do particularly want to thank today. Susan is here. The 12 years of getting to work with you. I think I told the story when I first came, and someone said, oh, you've been called to a new church. And I said, yeah, I'm going to Montclair. And they said, oh, they have a director of Christian education there. Don't mess it up. It's true. It's been wonderful to work with you and to see your devotion to the children and the youth of this church. It's a remarkable thing. And Christine, is Christine here? Is she up running something off in the office? There she is. To have, you know, a voice of such joy and welcome and enthusiasm in the office, to have her be the first voice that people hear when they call the church. And I know that they will hear a yes from her, and then it will be an authentic one. It's been great to work with her. And I think Gil and Maria, are Gil and Maria here today? Yeah. To have Gil and Maria and their family, Rosa and Atlakat, to be here, loving the physical manifestation of this church, seeing to it that these buildings and grounds are well tended, respectfully and with such devotion. I thank you that they were just arriving 12 years ago as I was arriving, and it's just been, you know, unbelievably wonderful to have such a gracious presence in the people who steward the physical plant of this church. So all of the staff people, I will miss you. It's been an amazing time to get to be together. And they are treasures of this church too, and I encourage you to treasure them and let them know that they are treasured. I will always treasure this place. and this time, these years. I don't think I'll ever find anything like this again. I'm really happy to be going to see Chandler and be with him, in the same time zone, day after day and month after month. That will be a great thing. And I remember when he went off to Michigan, and I wrote a letter to the congregation explaining what was going on, and I said, our home will have two hearts for a while, that we're going to be in two places. And as our two hearts end up in the same home, I will still be leaving my heart here. The scripture says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also, and I will always treasure you, and thank you, and bless you. Amen.